What's up, everybody? DJ and Bucky here from Move the Sticks. Before you get to your episode, let me tell you what's coming up on the latest Move the Sticks episode. It's number 100, the 100th episode of Move the Sticks, and we're going to take some time, going to dig into this draft. Players that have the same grade, we're going to separate them. We're going to talk about stock up and stock down in this draft class and even give you some names to preview for next year's draft class. It's all coming up on the 100th episode of Move the Sticks. Check it out, NFL.com, iTunes, as well as YouTube.
The Around the NFL podcast will never go 7-9.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Woo! What a day.
You remember a few days ago, we were thinking, should we do 2 pods? Should we do 3 pods? I don't know if there's going to be anything to talk about. A lot to talk about, bro.
Well, we didn't know that the schedule release would be Thursday. We certainly didn't know that the number one overall pick was going to be traded Thursday. I'm shooting air metaphorical T-shirt guns right now in this room. I'm so excited.
There's definitely somebody in the league office that's like, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. Those around the NFL guys. Not so busy. Let's go jack up their Thursday.
Pick up the chisels.
By the way, we're bringing back Jacked Up. I know you've been bringing back things a lot. That's been gone. Popular segment.
You mean the popular ESPN segment where they celebrated crippling brain injuries a few years?
Let's not bring back that. Sorry.
Good idea, Greg.
There is a big
Greg
announcement.
Just got jacked up by Dan.
It's a special day. It is Wes's favorite day of the year. It is the schedule release extravaganza. And you'll check your phones, your mobile devices, and notice that this podcast is dropping right as the news comes out. So, you know, don't even go to any other form of media. Just write it. Well, actually, you should, because we're not going to be able to, like, go team by team and tell you who your teams are playing. But we're going to break it down. We're going
to
slice it a bunch of ways.
NFL.com. And check the schedule.
Oh, yeah. Do that.
One place. We work for NFL.com.
ESPN.com maybe. Also will have it.
Yeah. And speaking of NFL.com, don't wait. What was that?
You just said, I mean, it depends. You've got options. You could go to team sites, go to ESPN. You can go to probably Bleacher Report. I mean, you've got a lot of options.
I mean, I wouldn't say that they should do that. We've all been writing all morning. I mean, people, if you're going to ingest schedule release content,
right,
it should probably be our
I'm not
site.
Down with controlling people's media habits.
speaking of NFL media, and we got a lot to get to, so we can't dilly-dally today, but I just want to say to Wes, I hold in my hand, and Greg has one in front of him, so does Wes, you have in your hand. You know, Wes, sometimes you will gripe about your pay here at the company, but then something happens, like what happened this morning at in our office when a woman walked around all the little.
It was a gentleman.
Well, Dan, it was actually it was a man.
Yeah,
it was a man.
Once again, the common man rankings.
All
Dan,
the worker
aware
bees.
Of anyone else?
A bald man.
A bald man, circled through the newsroom to all the worker bees and dropped off a Bic pen. And if you look very closely, there is a NFL Draft 2016 logo on that. Wes, you can't put a price on that. Well, you could. It's about 59 cents.
I have a meeting with the bosses right after this podcast, and I'm basically going to go in there and drop everything I've ever wanted, except a pay cut because I have this new fancy pen.
It's a pretty good pen.
It's actually not that good.
What was great was it was a gentleman. He was bald. Was actually looking at a list, and probably around 40 people in the room did not get a pen.
Mm.
It was only certain employees that got a pen. So
Wes, maybe this is
it's an olive branch.
Remember, It's a Wonderful Life.
It's an olive patch.
Yeah. That bald man was the ghost, and It's a Wonderful Life, showing you to appreciate what you have, this Bic pen.
Yeah, yeah. It's a wonderful implement.
All right, let's get to it, and we'll start. Why not, just for fun? Let's do some news, Irishman.
What can I say? Mamba out.
Another fascinating day in the NBA yesterday, by the way. It was akin to washed-up Kobe Bryant dropping 60 points on 50 shots in the last game of his career. It was akin to Peyton Manning in Super Bowl 50 audibling into a pass every play and finishing 44 of 82 for 6 touchdowns and 4 interceptions in a comeback win over the Panthers. It was that type of situation.
Well, no, it'd be a Week 17 game that meant nothing when you were part of the biggest part of the reason your team was the worst in the league or the second worst. So I wouldn't put him in the Super Bowl.
Well, the analogy was how he was a washed-up legend.
I thought it was especially fitting that he took 50 shots in his final game.
Yeah. Yeah. Some obviously intoxicated idiot, bought $17,000 worth of Kobe Bryant snake-skinned memorabilia, according to Darren Revelle. So that's information.
Why are you holding your microphone?
Because my mic on this headset slips to below my chin.
Why are you following Darren Revelle?
Well, he annoys me, and that news that he distributed, it annoyed me, and I tweeted about it last night. I'm fine with Kobe being out of our lives.
Kobe took a lot of shots, but it was a lot of fun to watch. But now we got to talk about the NFL and the huge, huge trade that went down. Are they the Tennessee Titans? Are they the Tennessee Titans? It still remains to be seen. We'll see how it all plays out. But there is a huge story that came down early Thursday in the NFL, and it involves the Los Angeles Rams. Yes, the LA Rams, who had told us that Case Keenum was their quarterback. Well, I don't think that's going to be the case after the news that broke. They have acquired the number one overall pick in the 2016 NFL draft from the Tennessee Titans, and it cost a lot. Tennessee gets the Rams' first-round pick in 2016, which I believe is 15th overall, 2 second-round picks in 2016, a third-round pick in 2016, a first-round pick in 2017, and another third-round pick in 2017. And the Rams get, yes, the first overall pick, a fourth-round pick this year, and a sixth-round pick this year. This is a bombshell, one of the biggest trades in recent NFL history, certainly the biggest one since the last time the Rams were involved in a blockbuster that ended with the Redskins drafting RG3, number two overall in the 2012 draft. Greg, your first thought when you heard about this deal?
My thought was, hooray for the Rams. Hooray for the Titans, too, that it can be a win-win. That I talked about it on the last show, that they seemed like a likely team to move up because they had to do it. They were just at this point in time where they absolutely need a quarterback. And there's no way to know if they're going to be a great quarterback. But if at any point Carson Wentz or Jared Goff, whoever they take, is a top 12 to 15 quarterback in the league, they make one Pro Bowl, whatever it is, it was worth it. There's no too much that you can give up for a quarterback. I think that's what you tweeted, right, Chris? And I totally agree with that.
There's no such thing as overpaying to get a franchise quarterback when you don't already have a franchise quarterback.
Well, and I think the Titans are actually a good example of that because they feel obviously very confident that Marcus Mariota will be that guy for a long time. And they had the number one pick, and you're at that point just building around the most important position. And the trade, the Rams win for that exact reasons that you mentioned, but so do the Titans. They got a bundle in this, and they have a talented general manager, in my opinion, who looks like he's now has the picks to really build a decent team. They're not the Titans.
Right, and they get a cup. They get the first and the third next year, so it's always nice when these kind of trades stretch out over years and you can just look forward to it and you get extra picks that you can use in different ways. The Rams only were able to make this pick. Jeff Fisher made this point, and he's absolutely right. They are only able to make this trade really because of the extra second-round pick that they had picked up previously. So these sort of trades give you flexibility and ammo to do whatever you want.
Well, he and Snead also, you know, were giving each other slaps on the back about the fact that, hey, it's a good thing we had that field goal blocked in that game we lost last year. I mean, they couldn't have framed a loss in more of a victorious way. But they're right.
A loss to Jim Tomsula.
You'd be feeling pretty good, too, if you didn't have to go into your next season with Case Keenum as your quarterback.
By the way, the worst smokescreen in recent memory. I think maybe before RG3's draft, was there a John Beck smokescreen out in Landover? I can't recall. But
They
followed through on that one. Yeah.
But I will say this. They're going to remain the Titans until they actually start mattering in wins and losses, because we said the same thing after Marcus Mariota was drafted and he started so well, and then they ended up being a joke. And they ended up, and this doesn't always sit with me well as a football fan, that a team can be so sucky that they get to leverage that. Like, they got Mariota last year, the number two overall pick, and then they got the number one pick again this year, and then they leverage it against a team that was desperate. So now they get all these other picks. Do something about it. Start getting better. I do not want to see you in the top five again next year.
That's why I said bring about a lottery. Remember? My draft rule.
Yes,
rule
it was
I'd
a
like
great
to change.
One,
get the lottery. You get the Titans out of there. And this is a much safer trade for the Titans. I mean, sure, they could blow all these picks. But to me, it's almost a no-lose trade at all for the Titans. It's almost they don't even have to think twice. Of course we could look back in 4 years and say this didn't work out for the Rams. That's not the point. That's not saying they're not a winner today, because there are chances in your football life, especially if you're Jeff Fisher and Les Snead, who are kind of on the edge here of keeping their jobs, that are worth taking. And this is just one of those chances.
Wiley Cats, by the
way. Worth taking.
These two guys, not only – we've been talking for years how these guys are Teflon – and now they wisely trade up and get a quarterback. And as long as he shows anything, whoever they end up taking, they will probably buy them more job security, even if they go 7-9 again.
Yes.
These guys could be around for another 2-3 years, even without doing anything.
Well, and I think whenever you find the quarterback, and it's a lesson to teams that want to get too smart and not pick a quarterback when you need one up top, Marcus Mariota, yes, the Titans are not a good team, but it was a perception-changing draft pick, because we think differently about the Titans primarily because of one player right now.
And they're able to think differently.
They're able to think differently. The Rams are the same way. I mean, the Rams, we made fun of the Rams for their 7-9 endless eternal streak. And the fact of this Case Keenum thing, one season after they basically lied to us about Sam Bradford. So now we don't have to hear any more fibbing and nonsense about the quarterback position. You get him, you sit on him for the next decade.
Well, we get it for a couple of weeks because they're yes. saying that they have not decided who the number one pick will
oh,
be.
Oh, no, but they have plenty of hay in the barn.
Are you buying a word of that?
The old shucks charm of Les Snead, whose hair in the press are better than ever, by the way. But I think I'm starting to think he's turning on that southern accent a little heavier to make him more endearing in what's going to be a major stressful period in his tenure.
Was a conversation in the newsroom among some of the ladies that I sit near in the middle of the news desks about
poor
that
guy.
About his good looks, that he was an eight, that even some that wasn't Les's type, they weren't his type, you know, their type, but they just,
well, they're not friends. Breaking news. I mean, he's right. been in our top hottest executive rankings for a long time.
Well, he's been at the top of that list. Wes.
I thought this is a rare trade where it would have been riskier for both teams to stand pat. The Titans could have drafted a Pro Bowl left tackle and had 7 or 8 open spots in their starting lineup on if you combine both sides of the ball. Now they have a chance in a draft where people say the meat of the draft is from the teens to 70. 6 picks in the top 76 picks. You can address many different positions. The Rams, I think it's far riskier to stay 7-9 and don't compete with Case Keenum. So what are you really giving up? You give up a chance to go 500 every year?
Right.
And I think they showed how it works the other way. People have argued that the Rams didn't do well with the RG3 trade. They did well with that trade. They got Brockers. They got who else am I forgetting? Aaron Donald in that trade was one of those picks. It was a solid group of players. And if the Titans just get 3 or 4 starters, it's a good trade for them.
And that's almost the best you can hope for. I mean,
right.
The way the draft works.
Well, you hope to get a star out of the.
Well, you hope to be the Dallas Cowboys Herschel Walker type thing, where you really hit on a few guys and build a championship. Which they have not built anything beyond a 500 outfit. Maybe this is the move that finally pulls it all together. By the way, Greg, you wrote a winners and losers piece of the trade, which everyone could see at NFL.com/Rosenthal. Who are the biggest losers in this deal?
Well, I don't think the Browns can like that a team just traded up ahead of them to take a quarterback. We don't know if the Browns are going to take a quarterback. We'll never know if they wanted the quarterback that the Rams take, assuming they don't trade. They're already putting it out there that, well, maybe the Rams and the Browns will trade. They both like Jared Goff. Who really knows? But the Browns might have a guy that they really wanted at quarterback, and now their option could be limited. It's just not a good thing that a team with the same needs passes in front of them.
Totally agreed. I do think that they probably were prepared for someone to do this. I mean, it sounded even yesterday before the trade, I talked to someone in the office who said basically that teams around the league aren't wondering if the Titans will trade the pick, just when and to who. It was almost presumed to be done.
Well, and other teams were in the mix, according to the Titans. So I think those other teams, you got to think of them as potential losers. I would put the 49ers at the top of that list, picking number 7. I thought either they could take a quarterback there, or maybe they were going to trade up. The Cowboys at 4, maybe they're going to take a quarterback or be able to trade that pick. So those teams seem to like losers to me too. It's going to be tougher for them.
Big winner, by the way.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
Hard Knocks fans.
Yep.
This is shaping up as potentially the best season ever.
It's got all the ingredients.
You got all the ingredients. You got Snead and Fishbaum and you got the L.A. move and all the drama there and Todd Gurley, and now you import all this drama with the number one overall pick, some hotshot quarterback. Maybe we'll see him hitting the dating scene in Hollywood.
Well, let me ask you, because you cover Hard Knocks primarily for the site.
It's the only thing I really do here, actually.
It's essentially your only
end
duty.
Around. End around is big. Mm.
That, too, comes around once
mostly
a year.
Mostly Hard Knocks recaps.
Which rookie quarterback would you rather see? I know that we don't spend a lot of time with these guys, but Wentz or Goff?
Are you setting me up for failure?
Well, just go. Maybe just go off their looks if you don't know anything about them. Just
I don't.
Yeah.
They're both whites. one's from North Dakota State. I feel like maybe a little culture shock.
I like that.
I think how much better.
Well, what do you who do you think would
Wentz
be better?
Seems like he has a little bit more personality. I don't think either one of them's. You know, they're quarterbacks for the most part. Quarterbacks aren't, you know, going to blow you away with wild personality.
I think Wentz is considered the more like a personality
right.
type.
He seems more interesting. Think about the quarterback battle now that you'll have. Instead of Keenum versus Mannion or Keenum versus Foles, Nick Foles will not be on the roster.
Nick Foles will just be sobbing in the quarterback.
He'll be on another team. It might work out well for him because he has guaranteed money from the Rams anyways. It's Keenum versus the North Dakota State guy because you know Keenum is sitting there. He's a loser in this trade. He's competitive enough, I'm sure, as any professional would be, that this annoys him. And he's going to, even though it's an uphill battle, he's going to be battling as hard as he can to keep that job.
All right.
Wes is ready for him.
Can I make one more point about this trade?
Yes, sir.
No.
All right, moving on.
So I did some research. Since 2008, when Joe Flacco was drafted at number 18, 20 quarterbacks have been drafted in the first round. Tim Tebow is the only one outside of the top five picks who's won a playoff game. And if you look at the franchise quarterbacks from those, out of those 20 guys, only six I would classify as franchise quarterbacks if you include Winston, Mariota, and Bortles. They're all drafted in the top five picks. It's a different game than it was in 99 and 2000 when guys like Kurt Warner and Jeff Garcia and Rich Gannon were coming out of nowhere to be great quarterbacks.
Right. You can hit on a second-round pick. I mean, it happens. Andy Dalton, Derek Carr. But I think what you're saying is these guys that teams kind of agree they're worth taking as a franchise type, you got to take them high. They're just going to go high, and you're going to get your Jake Lockers of the world every now and then too.
All right. That's what's happening in the news, and now Wes, who again, as he grips that pen in the same way he feels, wow, wait a second, it's all coming into focus, hashtag blessed to be here. Yes or no?
On schedule release day?
Yes.
You don't like schedule release
free
day?
Free pen.
Well, you know, this is a nod to Greg's excellent leadership. He kept me out of the schedule analysis online. Well, I mean, it was good because, you know.
I love when Wes dictates the terms of his writing around here.
He didn't say anything.
He got out of this entirely?
He didn't say anything. See, you just blew the cover. Sometimes I just do things quietly. Wes went on a schedule release rant and.
Dan, how about you start doing a lot of this film analysis then?
Yeah, see,
I didn't ask out of that.
He did not ask. I just made a decision. You know, why force someone that is clearly antagonistic to the beautiful enterprise when there's not that much? We used to have so much to do for schedule release. Now it's like we each won one meaty article.
I get where Wes comes from on this.
Yeah, I do more than my fair share on a lot of the analysis stuff.
I get it, Wes. Listen, this is analysis too. I know
I find it very hard to analyze a schedule 4 months, 5 months before the season, so it's hard for me to come up with analysis.
Right. Wes is just less talented than the rest of us at schedule analysis.
That's absolutely true.
We're great at schedule.
That's absolutely true.
Here's the truth about it. It is a little fluffy. But I will say this, and there's a lot of, like, the NFL is catching a ton of heat yesterday on social media because there was an announcement about the announcement. And, yes, it's all a little bit ridiculous. Your old friends at PFT were cute as usual. Taking shots at the league. And it's like, but then PFT will have 17 stories up about the schedule as soon as it lands and or leaks. So everybody that's complaining about the schedule, not you, Wes, calm down. Well, then don't read about it. Don't get all involved with it. Just stay away until September.
If I'm the person, I guess it would be Eric Weinberger is one of them, the people that really helped start NFL Network, the number one successes that they've had for the league as a whole are the scouting combine and this schedule release thing, which I also agree with Wes, especially back in the day. I used to think was just nonsense. But once our network started doing it for 2 hours and making it some event. Then ESPN copied it, and then everyone's doing all this stuff, and hey, it's paying the bills.
It's paying the bills is right. So let's break the schedule down, all 32 teams now. They all knew the teams, who they were playing, but now they know when they're playing, where they're playing, what time they're playing.
Yeah.
So that's good. You always need to know what time. Just like, Wes, you and I have our first softball game at 7:30 tonight.
Just you two?
Oh, yeah. I thought it wasn't happening.
Well, we might be scrimmaging because the other team is going to forfeit from what we're hearing. Mm. We don't know. Also on the team is the Irish.
Oh, okay, I just wanted to make sure.
I thought that
breaking news there.
No.
Maybe Wes got out of the schedule thing because, you know, just sitting near you guys this week, there's been roughly, what, 20 hours of discussion and planning
right.
about an NFL
right.
employee. I wish you guys the best of luck, but it's been a heavy operation.
Mark and I also, you know, in the middle, like when our contract negotiations come up, we'll bring up the fact, think of all the extra productivity you got out of us because we're not involved with this softball
team. Oh, that's going to glow.
Taking up half their time.
Any executive above us will see that clear as day if they know what they're doing.
By the way, the morale, the teamwork, the character building of playing with your colleagues, that is work in its own right. And for Wes and I, I'm the Joe Torre. Wes is my first lieutenant, Don Zimmer. We are putting together a champion, and we will keep people informed on the season. Brandon is a young prospect. He has a first baseman's mitt. Will he be able to play first base? We don't know, Wes, because it's a co-ed team, and you just don't know how the strategy breaks down.
Well, Wes,
who by all accounts is a star on this team, I'd be a little insulted that he's called Don Zimmer.
Jeez, I mean, you don't know the nuances.
And just so it doesn't get ugly in this
profiling.
Room, so it doesn't get ugly in here, Greg and I did your team a tremendous favor by not joining.
That's
all right. That we've helped you a lot.
And Dan, I want the record to show.
Yes.
I dove on the first practice.
He did. Only one guy was bleeding
dove.
We basically had a catch on Tuesday, and Brandon got dirty on one play and had skinned his knee. So
yes.
That
I go all out, just like I go out for this podcast. All right,
pick up the chisels. Big day for Brandon so far. You're doing great, buddy. All right, so let's get into the schedule a little bit. We'll start with, Greg, you wrote a piece up on the site right now. First, we'll get into the opener. The first game that we're all going to watch, and we'll be all excited, Thursday night of week one, has now become customary that the defending Super Bowl champion plays at home, unless the owner of the Orioles bangs you in a big spot. You will play at home. So in this case, the Denver Broncos will open the season against who, Greg?
The Carolina Panthers.
Yummy rematch.
First ever Super Bowl rematch to kick off a season, which probably shouldn't be that surprising. It's only somehow the seventh Super Bowl rematch in a regular season in NFL history, which seems like a low number. But,
well, it does, except
but
if
then
you look at the way the
I guess if you think about it, but the league used to be smaller. Either way, if you looked at the schedule, the Texans as a potential week one kickoff really annoyed me. I was not excited about that. I thought Patriots would be fine kicking off again the season, but I like this one. The Cam Newton against that Denver defense trying to make amends. You're not going to get revenge for the Super Bowl, but at least you can give your next season a nice little feel. Or if the Panthers are 0-1 after this game, it's just such a drag.
How are you going to feel if it's Mark Sanchez starting, though?
Well, it's either going to be Sanchez.
Wait, didn't you just break your own rule?
Well, I needed to provide news.
Wow.
I needed to provide news and analysis, so I put myself second.
Well,
Mark declared a Mark Sanchez moratorium on the pod.
Well, it's more important that I will not write about him on any level ever.
By the way, this and what
I would guess Kaepernick though if I had to guess week one.
Well, please, can we not talk about that?
I'm just saying.
Yeah, but you're right. You're probably right. There is, you know, I think that. This will be a strange situation because the Panthers were so badly outplayed a couple of months ago. Now you would think they'll be a favorite in this game, right?
Were they that badly outplayed?
Well, maybe. I guess maybe not.
It's in Denver.
They committed a lot of their own mistakes on the field.
I think I did go back and rewatch it eventually, and it reminded me a lot of the Giants-Patriots Super Bowl where I thought that the Giants were so much tougher than the Patriots throughout the game. So, yeah, maybe they weren't – it wasn't that mismanaged, but the Broncos were the tougher team on
both
sides of the ball, no doubt.
Okay, what about some other, Greg, primetime games that really jumped out to you when you thumbed your way through the schedule? By the way, the notorious DOP, Hank Hotchin, known in some circles as Handsome Hank on the the Dave Dameshek football program. It is cloak and dagger stuff when the schedule gets handed out to only essential personnel in the newsroom. Hashtag blessed. We all got a copy of the schedule yesterday.
I didn't give Wes one.
Kept out of the loop.
He wasn't writing. He didn't get one. The perk.
It was kept under lock and key to the point
Believe me, I gave zero thought to not having the schedule.
We were warned to, you know, hide the schedule because if it leaks on your watch, banged.
You can't get the digital copy. You got to just get the hard copy.
When you post these articles, you know, to go behind the curtain, you're only allowed to email it to two or three very specific people. The last thing you want to do is use the collective group email, which would send it to our entire office. So it's a good thing that none of us did that. Right, Dan?
I happened to write a piece that we'll get into a little bit, best revenge games on the schedule, that I sent to roughly 500 people in the company. Not all essential personnel, and you just hope there's no traitors.
Including seasonal employees who are home right now, you know, probably out to lunch and texting stuff to friends.
I should share an email that I got from a shadowy league figure, one of the top lieutenants within our division, who replied to my email or my copy with the line, "Probably shouldn't have done that to DM writers," which is the name of the group.
That's understated.
Probably. And then I responded, because there's only one way to respond, "Yes, I am an idiot."
Yeah.
Anyway, primetime games.
Well, I focused on the week one primetime games, which is really what I always look at first. That's all I care about because I can't think too far ahead. And I think the best game of the season for me happens to be that first Sunday night game. I wish they had saved it a little longer, but Cardinals Patriots in Arizona as your week one Sunday night game. I mean, those are two corkers off the bat. You have the four teams that were the final four in the NFL are the two first NBC games. And, you know, as talented as a team as you could possibly want in Arizona, Chandler Jones, first game of the year, he's going to be trying to make Bill Belichick pay for it. You got your first Martellus Bennett, Rob Gronkowski together sighting. It's a cool game. I don't like it because we tape a pod during it.
We're going to get our first look at Carson Palmer's irreversible decline. I mean, a lot of stuff to look forward to.
Wes, you can get excited about this game.
Yeah.
We were tasked with an NFL Now hit, and this was going to be my choice for best game of the year. Yeah. I didn't know it was going to be the Sunday.
So for you, week two, it's all downhill. It's just to turn off your TV.
Those are two fun ones start. And then you have the two Monday night games. Of course, they do the double header.
Love the double header.
Now that's traditional. I wish they would just do that every Monday night. Why not?
Oh, Greg.
Why not?
It's distasteful. Because it's about, you know.
Remember they had that middle of the night Sunday night game? That was terrific.
That was too much also.
That was Raiders.
And also the London games at 5 a.m.
That too.
Let's calm down with that as
new
well.
New window.
All right, go
just
ahead.
Spread them all out. Well, you remember my old theory. This was a couple years ago on the podcast. I broke it out. Just two games a day for the entire
I love that idea. I do.
No days off. Two games a day.
I like that theory.
Steelers, Redskins. Little random, but two playoff teams on that first Monday night game. I mean,
I like it.
That we're diffusing the boring nature of the NFC East with the most exciting offense just about to watch in the league. And then the Monday night finale, first Los Angeles Rams game in San Francisco.
Well, why in San Francisco? That's mildly tedious.
Why? Because you want the – it is a little weird.
Why not kick off the L.A. era in L.A.?
That's a great point.
And, sure, the Coliseum is in ruins right now, so they're just frantically trying to.
Well, there are legitimate issues with the Coliseum in USC, as you could imagine. And if you look at the Rams' schedule, they only have two games in the Coliseum before November 6th. And that's largely because of USC playing on Saturdays and different rules and things like that. They also have their quote-unquote home game in London during that time, so that takes up some time. But who knows? We don't know who the quarterback's going to be for either of these teams, but it is Chip Kelly 2.0. That's not a bad one to end it.
Let's talk about teams that at this point it appears that the scheduling gods are working in their favor. And, Greg, we actually did an NFL Now video hit earlier this morning where you were talking about the Green Bay Packers. Of all the teams that need a break, the Packers appear to have a nice clear path to perhaps the NFC North title.
Yeah, I like that. I like all the NFC North schedules because they have the easiest out of division schedule, I think, that of any teams. I believe it's the AFC South and the NFC East. So if you want to load up some wins, I think the Vikings, Packers, Lions, you know, they're all in good shape. The one thing the Packers have going for them is they don't have to play the Packers because that's a tough match.
They the one thing the Packers have going for them is they don't really play any superpowers.
Right. The schedule looks for Green Bay, especially early in the season. You're always looking at, like, is a team going to get off to a quick start? And I love the way the Packers' schedule. Yes, it starts with two road games, Jaguars, Vikings, but then you don't face another team that had a winning record last year until, what is it, week 11, and that's the Redskins. So
wow.
It's just a lot of teams that were mediocre last year, and that's true of a lot of these NFC North schedules.
You know, Connor Orr wrote this piece. Again, we have a ton of schedule release content at NFL.com.
Almost too much.
You could argue
definitely
that.
Too much.
You could argue that. And if you can't get enough of this written content, 3 hours of live coverage on the old Mothership Network.
Yeah, if you're listening to our podcast.
Get the whole family together.
3 hours.
Go for a picnic.
Connor Orr has offered up the Dallas Cowboys as a team with an easiest schedule. I'm not sure if I agree because I don't know if they're a type of team that has any gimmies. But this is what Connor had to say. They open at home. They got back-to-back. They open the home against the Giants. They travel to Washington. Then they host the Bears at home before going up to San Francisco.
It's a good start.
It's a nice start. And I, I talked about the Ravens as another team that I thought had what looked like an easier sked because they're playing the two East divisions, which other than the Patriots, there's not a lot of powerhouses. But I like to look. I don't like to put too much into the schedule, but I like to look at the top of the schedule and see which teams can potentially get off to that 2-0, 3-1, best case scenario 4-0 type start. I think the Ravens are a team like that. Connor believes the Cowboys are a team like that as well.
Yeah, I kind of disagree because the NFC East, while the in-division games are not difficult, they do have to play the AFC North out of the division. They do have to play the NFC West, I believe, out of the division. Am I wrong? I'm wrong. The AFC North, which is, either way, it's not easy.
AFC North is, you don't want to, any NFC East team is dealing with a tough deal there.
Now let's move to Wes. Any thoughts on that?
No thoughts. You guys covered it well, as you did.
Wes is just going to sit out the whole podcast?
As you did in the written form.
Who is your easiest schedule on NFL now? I believe you thought the Baltimore Ravens.
Well, I talked about that roughly
64 seconds. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I was looking at
it. It's okay.
Greg, you
we're all excited about the schedule release.
He took my hot take. It was going to be the Packers.
Mm.
When I glanced at their schedule, it seemed by far the easiest of anyone.
If there's teams that have a nice schedule, there's teams they got banged, and I want to talk about one of them. And it's not fair because a certain team that plays in the Meadowlands, snapping back to the big game since 1969, won 10 games last year, didn't even get in the playoffs. And how do my New York Jets get rewarded for being a non-playoff team with this heavy heart? And the pain of all the years of frustration. Number two on the pain rankings, NFL.com/pain rankings. The New York Jets start their season with their first six games are against five playoff teams. Cincinnati Bengals at home, at Buffalo, at Kansas City, home to Seattle, at Pittsburgh, at Arizona on a Monday night. The only team that didn't make the playoffs, of course, is the Bills, who swept the Jets last year. And it's on a short week. On the road, It would be very possible that my beloved New York Jets, and you guys, I could tell you guys are emotional and upset about it as well, could go 2-4, worst case scenario, go 1-5, and their season's over. I'm very nervous that this could be one of those seasons where the Jets bomb out in the first 2 months. Well,
flip side would be that this is a perfect set-the-table operation for Geno Smith's comeback tour.
This is, don't even play the game. Lost season for the Jets. Mo Wilkerson gets traded on draft weekend. Geno Smith takes over at quarterback, and they have a hard schedule. It's going to be like
Geno Smith's going to take over after the 2-4 start when they bench Ryan Fitzpatrick, and then he's going to look great. It does ease up, and we.
By the way, nothing anyone said just now is not unrealistic. It's all this is in play. I think the Jets are doomed after looking at the schedule.
That is you almost wonder because they try so hard for parity and to give a team like the Jets who had a nice season last year, you thought they'd want to bounce off that. That is a rough slate.
It's just
today.
It's just the AFC East. And yes, the Jets' schedule eases up a little bit in the second half, although they do have their
better.
They have their two Patriots games in the last 6 weeks, so those are obviously
that's
difficult.
Easing up.
But the AFC East, they all have tough schedules. He's a Jets fan, but if the Jets had opened with the Dolphins schedule, we'd be hearing crying about that too. The Dolphins start with the longest potential trip in the entire NFL if you're staying domestic, and that is to Seattle. That's a loss. The next week is in Foxborough. That is literally the hardest 1-2 punch, any combination I believe that you could come up with in the NFL.
Well, it gets real nice in week three.
At New England. Yes, you get the Browns in week three for your home opener. So, you know, Gloria Estefan's going to enjoy that. You know, she brings out what's her backup band?
Dude, the Miami Sound Machine.
Wow, great.
So the Sound Machine's playing halftime. You get a win, but then you go to Cincinnati on a Thursday night on a short week. Another tough team. So that if you're better than 1-3 coming out of that, they're doing pretty lucky.
Yeah, but then they got the Titans, and maybe they'll be better this year. But the Browns, obviously, 4-12 team. The Titans, 2-14, sandwiching the Bengals game. So we don't know how these teams are going to be.
Well,
but
they
could be okay. They could be 2-3 after 5 weeks.
But they basically have the same schedule as the Jets. And so my point is the Bills have this schedule. The Patriots have a tougher version of this schedule.
They do? Do they play the Patriots twice?
No, they don't have to deal with that.
What a joke.
That.
The classic throw to bees.
All right.
Classic throw to bees. Again. Again. How do you forget that, Greg?
New England opens in Arizona, by the way. A brutal start. the division has to play the top two divisions of our division power ranking. So we're the smartest NFL analysts in the country. We decided that the AFC North and the NFC West are the two best divisions. Those are the two divisions that the AFC East plays. So you could see a lot of these teams kind of slide back a little bit. It's going to be tougher.
I like that the Browns and 49ers are listed here on the hardest schedules, because when your roster is in such dire straits as they are in San Francisco and Cleveland, every game is a hard game on the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, the problem in Cleveland.
But it's true. They do have a tough schedule. That division is hard.
It's always tough because you automatically get banged six times with the other teams in that division.
So
but
the
other problem is they're just not good at football right now.
Right.
So it's like, that's honestly, because even some of these bad teams, you could have what we would call an easy schedule. You're still going to win three games.
Yeah, but it especially seems cruel for the Browns. In their first seven games, only two of them are at home. So five road games out of seven, which is a very, you know, they obviously have a heavy backloaded home schedule. And those two home games, one's against the Ravens, you know, division game, and the other one's against the Patriots. So
well, you've got to be annoyed
if you're...
That is
a brutal start.
That is. And if you're the ownership in Cleveland and you're trying to sell tickets and all your games are at home in November and December and you're 1-9.
Exactly.
You're looking at a half-empty stadium.
Is 0-16 in play?
You are a factory of sadness!
Stop. Don't say that before.
Put the chisel down.
Look at the Buccaneers in the first 5 weeks. This stands out. In the first 5 weeks, the Buccaneers play the Cardinals, Broncos, and Panthers.
Yes.
The three best teams in the NFL.
Yeah, and two of those games are on the road. I think
they
play two road games to start the year. The Bucs have a tough one. I thought the Rams, and you could really put any team that gets stuck playing a home game in London as a team with a tough schedule, because you're basically giving up a home game. I know everyone's excited they're moving here, but like I said, they have two home games in L.A. before November 6th, and that's because of the USC thing. And they also, are they going to have that much of a home field advantage here anyways? Aren't there going to be a lot of road fans in
it's
L.A.?
Quite, at least initially. All right, let's move on.
And you got to play four games against the Seahawks and Cardinals.
That ain't fun. That ain't fun, brah. Let's move on, Mark. You wrote an excellent piece. I couldn't put it down. On the Thursday night football schedule, the games that really jumped out to you.
Well, I had to write about every game, actually. So.
And I know, I believe I had this assignment last year, and it was a banger, I remember. Twitter.
Kevin,
first of all, breakdown.
Kevin Patcher had it, wasn't it?
Dan had it 2 years ago. He did a very, what I thought was, I wanted to take this approach. You'd put them in tiers. Kind of best to worst. Right. And then NFL Network got on Dan's back and said, we ain't doing it this way. So now it becomes a Russian novel where you go through every single game and give your thoughts.
That reminds me of when they had me do a live blog of the first Pro Bowl draft, and I made a crack about Steve Mariucci potentially getting blown into the Pacific Ocean, and several producers talked bad about me behind my back for years, and maybe to this day for bashing.
It's still going on.
All right, Mark, TNF Sked, what jumps out?
Well, when I was going to do top five, I struggled with it, to be honest with you, because I think TNF has a bit of a complexity issue in terms of getting the best games, because it's where you have to put all these teams that wouldn't be on primetime otherwise. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of divisional games, obviously.
Yeah, they really focused on that. Well, they're almost all divisional games.
They aren't all, because you've got Miami and Cincinnati in week four. I like right out of the gate. I know you don't like the Jets schedule, but week two, Jets versus Rex Ryan and the Bills. I like getting that. Let's tee that up early and get a feel for both teams. I think Buffalo's got a lot to prove. The Jets don't want to deal with Rex Ryan. They want to put him under 6 feet under the ground, and they'll have a chance.
Well, We don't want to kill him.
Well, I don't want him to die either. But
can I just say it was kind of an amicable divorce between Jets fans and Rex?
I like to make it more than it was. I thought there was a lost opportunity in week five. Arizona Cardinals, which were on primetime a lot last year, you put them against the Niners, and, you know, come on, could we have found a better matchup here? Mm. But again, TNF has to get the Niners on primetime somehow.
That's an interesting call, though, because the minimum is one primetime game, but the Niners, just looking at it, they got two. And I feel like that's one too many for the Niners.
That's too many.
They should have been at the minimum.
Yeah, you're right.
Because they got the opening week one, which is sort of... You know, that doubleheader second one isn't the best spot. But, yeah, I agree. Cardinals, 49ers. But there's some good games here. Texans-Patriots is interesting, week three.
I think they have done a good job later in the year, because week 13 and 14, December 1st and December 8th, you get the Cowboys at the Vikings. Has potential to be interesting. And, you know, a matchup that has really pretty much sucked for a long time. The Raiders and Chiefs, a storied rivalry, actually might have some juice at that time of year.
I like this week 16 game with playoff implications on the line. TJ Yates comes off the bench recovered from ACL surgery and beats the Bengals again.
Wow. That's on
Christmas. There we go, Wes. I love it.
That's on Christmas Eve. So while the rest of America is unwrapping presents and by the fire, TJ Yates.
Merry Christmas, Bengals fans.
With Wes at the keyboard monitoring every move.
By the way, this has nothing to do with, you know, I guess we could have known this before today. But this is one of those years, and I believe it only happens once every 7 years.
First time since 2011.
Or I guess even more often, that football is being played on Saturday of week 16, the whole league just about, and it's Christmas Eve.
With a night game.
Then they put a couple games on Christmas as well.
Papa, where are you?
Yeah, basically, when I was scanning this, you're trying to what fires are we going to need to put out on the home front? It's a long season, and you know, you get around to the fact that we all, you know, you're getting banged with three games on Thanksgiving, and now it's usually Christmas, which, you know, it falls on a Wednesday or a Thursday, and everyone, Connor Orr probably does an early shift, and everyone else is off. Now it's line yourself up for 27 games in a row, a ton at night, everyone
Mama,
six across. Go,
Mama, did Daddy go away?
Get ready for that.
Exactly. You know, the league has essentially their family first motto takes a hit here.
You just gonna have to pretend that the 26th is Christmas. That's all.
Mama,
that's a great tradition.
Mama, what are Daddy's priorities?
Can I mention one thing? In week 10,
beat writers listening to this thinking we're a bunch of spoiled guys. We get to stay home with our family. They all got to go travel.
All right.
They are not listening to this.
Mark, can you provide
the beat writers.
Can you provide some nuanced context on NFL's deal with Twitter?
Well, I actually asked a question, because I asked a follow-up question. They said, what is it going to look like on Twitter? What does it mean? You sit there and you can't get away from it? There are a lot of people on Twitter who have nothing to do with football. You have a choice to not watch it. And the answer was, we don't know.
That's not new.
That's where we're at. Well, I'm giving you as much information as I have.
I assume it'll be some sort of, you know, like any online presentation. It'll basically be some sort of screen or whatever you call it, app type of thing you're watching the game. And maybe they'll integrate Twitter next to it. You know what I mean. It's not like they're going to make you watch
it. Cool.
You got to open it up like the NBC one or the NFL one.
Couch show on Sunday.
How do you tweet while you're watching the game?
Well, that's
on
the
Twitter thing.
How is that going to be integrated? Is it just going to be sort of on the right rail where it's all like connected? It would be cool.
If they don't change the name of that show to the Couch Show, they're really missing an opportunity.
Well, Dave Damashek. Oh, wait, what is it again? No, we're a little rusty now. It's the
Sunday Extravaganza.
NFL Game Day Blitz?
NFL Game Day Blitz. Only on NFL Now.
But, well, you know what's different, too, is we get Al and Chris on these Thursday nights. They have five games. CBS has five games.
Well, they won't know what to do without an NFC East team in every one of these.
Since you brought
they do have the Cowboys here at least once.
Since you brought up the announcers, Mike Tirico, you've done it again. Tasked with calling the final Kobe Bryant game, you provided call after call that made me think, once again, you are the best in the business, with all apologies to Al Michaels.
So versatile.
I thought it was funny, though, that Hubie Brown, there was a little bit of discomfort you could tell with him of the total focus on, he's hit 50 points! And then Hubie's like, yeah, but they're trailing by 10. Like, he kept mentioning
that. He did
that,
say that a couple times.
Hey, by the way, like, there's a game being played.
Yeah, but who was...
It all worked out well because Kobe ended up making a comeback and they win. But every once in a while, you could see he was a little uncomfortable with Tirico just going nuts.
Well, who really had the right context, though? Because who cared about the game? The game's... The outcome of the game
Tirico,
was secondary.
Tirico got to the heart of the matter.
I agree, but only because they won. If they had lost by 10... It wouldn't have been the same thing.
It was a good Costas impersonation by Tirico, getting to the heart of the matter.
Well, I like that. By the way, a lot more Costas coming at you with this new Thursday night.
Oh, that's true. It's interesting. Oh, I noticed in our makeup room, I don't know if Dan or Wes, you've ever seen this, there's a picture of Bob Costas with his signature on it in our makeup room. You know how people sign a little picture and they put it up? There's one from Costas from 2004. I saw that the other day. I went back in there today and I looked and it was stolen. Great. It was gone.
No, that is not
it. It was gone. I think
number one, we have seen the culprit. It's a Polaroid. They have hundreds of Polaroids of everyone that's
ever been.
That's right. Everyone but four people that have ever been on NFL Network, and Costas is one of them.
That's funny.
Listen, our list of grievances is
growing.
Is long.
Finally, before we get out of here, let's talk revenge games. I'm just trying to goose this one up a little bit because I wrote the copy. So it's like when the chorus hits is when it really takes off. Bang. All right.
This gets me thinking. I should ask my wife, Emiko, you know, for some of her favorite J-pop. I mean, because I think you can do even better than this.
Pon Pon Pon?
I know she likes Bump of Chicken. That's one.
Ooh,
that's
we got to look that up.
What is that name?
Irishman, can you take note of that?
That wasn't her favorite. There was this other group that was her favorite.
That sounds like a euphemism.
My buddy Dave liked them, too, but I can't remember.
Bump of Chicken. Bump of Chicken. How do you top that? Good luck to you.
Let's open the next show with Bump of Chicken. All right, so this is about the games that scream revenge. And the two that really obviously jump out, one in week seven, we'll start with, actually we'll put it in order in which they'll take place. Week four, RG3 against the Redskins in Landover. Of course, there are two things in play here for this even to be something that's on the nation's collective radar by the time this actually comes around. RG3 has to be the starter for the Cleveland Browns, which we don't know as of yet, depending on how the draft shakes out. And RG3 has to stay healthy for the first 3 weeks of the season, which is no given, obviously, given his history. But let's just, for the fun of it, say he is on the field as the starter, and he is high in the sky, playing well, Mark. Then he gets to go into Washington, the team that gave up on him, the guy that was supposed to make that franchise relevant for a decade and a half. Instead, they kicked him out the door, and now he gets a chance at revenge.
I thought this might wind up being Cleveland. You look at Cleveland's schedule for like the eighth year in a row. There is one primetime game and 15 games that start at 1 p.m.
I noticed that.
And that's the case again. I thought this would get that primetime treatment, but, you know, it has to be earlier in the year.
And it's probably
they're lucky that it's early.
They knew it wasn't definitely going to happen, so they probably couldn't bank on it.
What,
Greg?
Well, they put them on Thursday Night Football in Week 10 against the Ravens in Baltimore.
You think Mark's being cute the way he's talking about the Browns in primetime?
Forget me. Football fans don't want to watch that game.
Well, so I guess you're right.
I mean, come on. Wait, what is the question?
Well, I thought he was like smirking at you because
I don't think he griping
about the Browns primetime
schedule. No, I think he knows that that's not a good idea.
I like this Mario Williams because it was just at the owners' meetings in March where Rex said, "We're going to have that game circled."
Yeah, and not only did Mario Williams call out Rex, and that's two matchups, obviously, because Williams landed with the Dolphins, so week 7 and 16, Williams called out Rex Ryan's schemes as not a good fit for his skill set, and then Bills players, as things got ugly, leaked how Mario wasn't really playing hard, and this was a guy who was, you know, highest paid guy on the team.
By the way, a little breaking news since we're on the topic of the Buffalo Bills. Percy Harvin. Nice. Man, the chisels. Everybody's working through the weekend on Mount Rushmore because Brandon is killing it today. Percy Harvin has told the Bills that he's retiring from the NFL. This is from Rap Sheet, per a source informed of Harvin's thinking. So we had heard this basically goes against the reporting from about a month ago that he was planning on playing, but apparently, you know, speculation here, but maybe that hip is not bouncing back, and it's now something that he decided to end his career on. Percy Harvin, out of football before the age of 30.
Definitely just doesn't mean what it used to mean. Because that's what the report was, March 30th. He's definitely playing in 2000.
Well, he has informed the Bills that he's retiring. Who knows? He could obviously change his mind. But
next week.
Right. Or he could even more likely change his mind next year. That's becoming, I don't know if it's a trend, but I could see it becoming a trend. Players taking a year off like Anthony Davis. Percy Harvin's only 27 years old, might decide he wants to play again. But if he doesn't play again, what a weird career.
Yeah,
four teams, looked like a superstar, gets kicked off, essentially the Super Bowl champion team because of a fight. Just a strange career when you thought he was going to be so good.
From a talent level, though, I mean, we just talked about RG3. You want to talk about a list of players where injuries sideswiped what would have been potentially a really fascinating NFL career. I mean, Harvin is. If you had put Harvin with an earlier period, Brett Favre, when he was with Favre in the Vikings, he was marvelous.
He was good as a rookie. He's a rare rookie that came into the league and made a big impact right away, and was pretty healthy his first 3 years in the league. The injuries.
What was the migraine? It was like, yeah. I feel like there were 4,000 articles written about the migraine.
And with Harvin, it just shows you how quickly things change in the league. Last spring, there was the big. Around the Jets, a big hubbub. Should they keep Percy Harvin at $13, $14 million a year or cut him loose and go get someone else? They decided to trade for Brandon Marshall. That obviously worked out very well for Big Mac. He then signs with the Bills, Wes, and I remember you writing about it. He looked great in September, and then the injury bug came up and got him.
Well, early in his career, one of the physically toughest wide receivers in the league, and maybe the best after-catch wide receiver I ever saw was the first 8 weeks of 2011 or 12. He was in the MVP race, and he was so elusive after the catch.
Belichick loves him.
Well, think about it. Only 3 years ago, the smartest or one of the smartest front offices in the league gave up a first-round pick to acquire him and a third-round pick. It was a first and a third to get Percy Harvin.
But anyway, so yes, maybe we'll talk about that a little later in another show. But back to, revenge, which is the key thing to be talking about here. Yeah, so the Bills don't like Mario Williams. Mario Williams doesn't like the Bills. That's double-sided revenge narrative. A couple other revenge pops, of course. Brock Osweiler versus the Broncos in Week 7.
Did they put that in primetime?
It's Monday Night Football, my friend. Mike Tirico. And John Gruden with the call. So yummy, yummy, yummy. I like this one, Wes. Chris Long versus the Rams, Week 13. I know, Wes, you think that Chris Long's got something in the tank. You know he has that date circled. Because how annoying is it to be Chris? Well, everything ended up well. You're with the AFC powerhouse. But after years of middling teams in St. Louis, they move to L.A. That's fun. Then they go get the quarterback. And now you get shipped out of town or get dumped.
How about
I'd take the Patriots if I was him.
How about an impromptu round of go get my lunch?
Wow.
I like this.
Chris Long has more sacks than Chandler Jones in the 2016 season.
I'll take that.
I'll take it.
I knew you would.
I will take it too.
All right.
Yeah, because you're going with a guy who even in his prime was not getting the same amount of sacks as Chandler Jones. I believe Chris Long's only top 10 sacks once. That could be.
I like to look at it that I will not owe you that sandwich till at least about January 2nd.
From 2010 through 2013, Chris Long averaged 75 hits, hurries, and sacks, which was second in the NFL over that four-year span to Cameron Wake's 76.
Yeah, but the last 2 years are also a real thing.
They happened. They were cut short due to injuries.
He did have two seasons over 10 sacks.
I'm sure he's lost a step or two, but we're talking about a guy who was one of the premier pass rushers in the league.
Surprise,
and the Patriots got him at a huge discount.
Good sandwich, Wazer.
What a shocker. Breaking news and go get my lunch.
Yeah, and that reminds me, by the way, that's enough of that revenge malarkey, but that reminds me that my least favorite
round, but I take part in it because that's you can't be a coward. My least favorite round of go get my lunch props is draft season, where I got killed last season. I think something to the tune of 2-14. I've rallied back when real football stuff, but now I'm back with a new strategy I'll have. But we'll have to do it, I guess, next week or the week after. We got 2 weeks to figure it out, but we will have another round of Go Get My Lunch draft edition.
And if you want to check up on how things are going, gogetmylunch.org, looking at the total standings. Ooh, I'm back in first.
Oh, actually, it's nice close. Plug by Greg for Greg.
Dan's basically tied. You know, I have more wagers, but we're both 9 over. So okay. It's close. Wes is right there as well. Mark, well, not so much.
I started terribly. I actually did well in that draft one, but the draft's going to be a wild card because I would wager that the four of us have never spent less time studying the draft than this year.
That's potentially true. All right. We got to go. iTunes challenge is still going on. Hashtag iTunes challenge. Leave a 5-star rating. Leave a comment. Let's goose it. Let's beat the Apple Corporation and really stick it to them, guys. We will be back on, let's say, Monday.
Definitely Monday.
With another show as we move closer to the draft. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This is Dan Hansis signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman. We got through it, Wes. Schedule release spectacular is out of the way. The boss and the Irishman behind the glass. Till Monday.